Robinhood Radio presents Stage Right or Not with Michelle Willems. Michelle is a longtime journalist and herself is a published playwright of several theatrical works. She's a frequent contributor to the Huffington Post, Daily Beast, and the Atlantic websites. Another opening
of another show. Well, this week I saw a revival of a great musical, one that faces the challenge of feeling relevant in these he said, she said times. Then I saw a new musical about, well, about a very old form of music and a sort of new play by a longtime playwright. And finally, I saw a one-character piece that not only changes performers daily, but doesn't let them read the script until they step on stage. Yep, four shows. So let's start with the Way, Way Back, Roundabout's revival of Cole Porter's Kiss Me, Kate at Studio 54. This one, of course, centers on a turbulent on-again, off-again, will-it-be-on-again relationship, and it's based on Shakespeare's Taming of the Shrew. The draw in this production, dazzlingly directed by Scott Ellis, is Kelly O'Hara. She is brilliant as the diva Lily Vannessi, funny, sexy, in great soprano voice, and more than a match for her male counterpart, her ex-husband Frederick Graham, all oversized Ego, wonderfully played by Will Chase. This is about as expert a production as I can imagine, in no small part due to the choreography of Warren Carlyle. Honest, if they hadn't restarted the dialogue, the audience might still be cheering a few of the numbers. None better than the Act Two opener of Too Darn Hot. The whole cast is top-notch, though the third star has to be Corbin Blue. I first saw this charismatic tapper in Holiday Inn, which was a mediocre show, but he was the one to remember. Now, Kiss Me, Kate is filled with fun lines. There is a law against attempted murder, even in Baltimore. But it's mostly Cole Porter's lyrics that astound. And no, you don't have to brush up on your Shakespeare to follow. Puberty paired with shrewberty, what scandalous doings happening in the ruins, oh, they go on forever. And even if you don't think you know the songs, you'll recognize every single one of them. Kiss Me, Kate, as usual with Roundabout shows, is in a limited run, so I guess I should say run, don't walk. Meanwhile, more great choreography is happening at the Imperial Theater, where the latest jukebox musical has just opened. Ain't Too Proud, The Life and Times of the Temptations. Now, whether you were a diehard fan of the hugely successful Motown group or not, you will likely recognize all the songs here, too, and find yourself tapping most of your appendages. The show started in Berkeley, then played in Los Angeles before hitting Broadway, where I would imagine it should have a pretty solid run. There have been countless jukeboxes since Mamma Mia and Jersey Boys. The latter sort of set the template, how the group came together, the inside battles, the defections, the replacements, the private lives sacrificed for public fame, and so on. Ain't Too Proud has them all, but despite the cookie-cutter predictability and its share of cliches, singing is going to be my salvation. The production is largely enjoyable from start to finish, and much of the credit goes to the choreography of Sergio Trujillo, who manages to combine the Motown moves of old with more contemporary ones that frankly never stop. Here, too, the cast is pretty darn brilliant. James Harkness, Jeremy Pope, Jawan Jackson, Ephraim Sykes, and especially Derek Baskett as the leader, who is also the narrator here. They all become clear individuals, and we get to know every incoming and outgoing temptation as the show moves along. The most interesting element of the story, I think, is the pressure from Motown and others to perform music that will appeal to whites. But can you shine if you blend? Asked one character. Why can't they cross over to us? Asked another. Well, in the end, of course, we did cross over. But not without a lot of sacrifice from artists like the Temptations, whose lives were put in literal danger just by performing in the South. We were always giving up private lives to become larger than life, says our narrator. And there was real tragedy here among the artists who were trying to reach the top of the charts and stay there. No small feat, mostly achieved, and believe it or not, some version of The Temptations is still performing today. The smallest and arguably the most original show of my week was Nassim, which still has some time left on its run at New York City Center. What you need to know is that a different performer reads the script at every performance and has no preparation or rehearsal. My actor was the game and appealing Paul Sparks. The role is played by men and women, by the way. They communicate via computer instructions from the playwright, an Iranian named Nassim. Now, how do I face the screen and the audience at the same time? The actor asks right up front. Well, somehow it works. We don't see Nassim himself until the second half of this 75-minute piece, when he shares the stage, without speaking, however. The show is about communication. Languages can bring us together or tear us apart. Repression in Iran and a childlike hunger for storytelling. There were very young kids in our audience, which at first confused me, but it is totally appropriate. The show is short, humorous words and photos fill a screen, expressing the perhaps naive belief that if we could just talk to each other, maybe we wouldn't fight and hate so much. Nassim has been playing around the world and finally got through our immigration process at the end of last year. Now, the least memorable show of my week was Nantucket Sleigh Ride, written by John Ware and playing at Lincoln Center's Mitzi Newhouse. This play apparently has been reworked and renamed since an earlier run in Princeton. Ware is a beloved and award-winning writer. He gave us Six Degrees of Separation and House of Blue Leaves, both played at Lincoln Center, which is, I imagine, why they would present anything with his name on it. This one is about what we remember and why, and makes fun of that. You have to have a memory to write a memory play, says its main character, well played by John Larroquette. The show has other inside quips about the theater world. Will they revive it? Well, they revive every play. The plot centers on a one-hit wonder playwright turned businessman and also includes some mistresses, a pair of oddball-grown children, Roman Polanski, Hitchcock's suspicion, a frozen Walt Disney, and an electrified lobster. Huh. There is some good humor here, some not so good, and an overall feeling of, well, a little bit of fatigue. On the other hand, it's less than 2 hours, and one can't help but feel a lot of affection for and gratitude to a playwright who has probably seen his best days. And so, Jill, it was another Only in New York kind of week.
Sounds pretty good. Now, speaking of, so you were happy with the Kiss Me, Kate, yes?
Yeah. That's about as good as it gets.
Right. And, once again, from an entertainment standpoint, if any young, old alike, that's just something that you want to know about, isn't it?
I think so. I was surprised there were a lot of young people in our audience. They seem to be in groups. Matter of fact, I actually asked one of them. They were there on spring break. But I was happy to hear. I said, what other shows are you seeing? And they said, we're seeing this one and Phantom of the Opera, I think. And I thought it was good that, you know, that they were being taken, not necessarily to the prom or Mean Girls, but to a great old classic show. And they seemed to enjoy it. Pretty hard not to enjoy this one.
Got that right. Now, apropos, I noticed something the other day. I don't know whether we've mentioned it or not, but since we mentioned Scott Rudin in Mockingbird terms, and just like, wow, that's that's uncharacteristic terms. Uh-huh. In much more characteristic terms, I was interested to see that Hugh Jackman is coming back. I think it's not till 2020. In The Music Man,
and yeah, that's great musicals, huh? Mm-hmm.
Right, but also that talk about something that will sell tickets from the minute that it's announced.
I think so. That one makes sense, doesn't it? Hugh Jackman. You know, he started in Oklahoma, did his own shows. He comes back and forth to Broadway about every 2-3 years almost.
With at $250,000 a ticket because it's such a good show.
It's a great show. It's right up there with Kiss Me, Kate. I think probably more famous than Kiss Me, Kate, frankly. I think most people think, well, this is unfair to say, but the two of the greatest musicals ever are Music Man and Gypsy. Gypsy usually comes up on the top of that list. And Music Man, you know, it's great. It'll be interesting to see there, too, what they do with, you know, a little bit. I don't want to say the Me Too thing. I mean, they're not going to make the Music Man the music woman. It's still the music man. But you know, what will they do with Marion, the librarian? I don't know. Maybe she'll be writing those books in the library instead of just renting them out or whatever, signing them out. You know, that's a pretty old-fashioned musical in a lot of ways. Kiss Me, Kate had the perfect, you know, it's all about banter between he said, she said, you know, so that's made for these times we live in.
And oh, you mean Shakespeare was made for these times we live in?
Yeah,
there's a point at which you sort of have to go, all right, look, why don't we just dust this off and say, this came from another era, and perform the thing.
That's right. That's what I said, the way back. You know, it goes back way beyond 1948 when Kiss Me, Kate was first done to when Shakespeare did it. So, yeah, all these things can be done. But anyway, I think Music Man sounds like a winner. It's been done so many times on Broadway. I can remember seeing it at least twice. The worst performance I ever saw the Music Man was done at a private girls' middle school. Why they chose the Music Man, I have no idea. But
practice.
They'd probably have fun with that one now, too, you know. Anyway, yeah. And is Scott Rudin behind the Music Man? Is that why you brought that up?
Yes.
Oh, okay. I didn't even realize that. Well, that's...
I'm just saying that characteristic, uncharacteristic, that would... Mm-hmm. I would expect to go down the list of, you know, who's doing this, and that is what I would expect to see. And I'm just commenting that at least in this instance, the world is now revolving properly around, you know, on its axis.
Yeah, and he did Carousel last year. He revived Carousel, which was not a success, actually. So I'm glad he's, Scott Rudin, I'm glad he's coming back with this. And like you said...
Now, Carousel, speaking of Me Too, speaking of time, speaking of difficult,
mm-hmm.
you know, that came out at a moment where so much emphasis was on what are they going to do about this, that, you know, once again,
mm-hmm.
how can you generate decent... I remember when Carousel was, again... Age alert, Audra McDonald. Now, that, you know, she was just...
That's exactly right. That was at Lincoln Center. First time I ever saw Audra McDonald. You're
right. And everyone was just floored. I mean, staggered in the same way they were staggered when Don Mattingly went out to first base for the first time. Was, wow.
We all say it's like, we remember when we lost our virginity. We remember when we first saw Audra McDonald. And you're right. That was that's who she was. She wasn't she was the secondary lead in that,
right.
Not the first lead.
But my point,
that's a dark show. Yeah, that's a dark show.
My point is that it was a dark show. It's always been a dark show.
Yeah.
But the difference, no particular punchline other than to say, because of all the focus at that time on how are they going to handle this? Oh, abuse. Oh, Me Too. Oh, the
That one.
It changes it changes the word of mouth. It changes the conversation. And I just
all kinds of things you can do, you know, whether it's Eliza Doolittle storming off the stage when she used to just stand behind him at the end to fetch the slippers, to even the Kiss Me, Kate. I have to go back and look at the stage directions. I don't know. At the end of this one, this is not a spoiler alert because it doesn't matter. I'm sure nobody even noticed. But she, as they exit, she opens the door for him. And I wonder if that was always the way it was done.
You'll have to check that. And then may I just recommend that everybody go see that Winslow boy again. And I'll leave it at that.
Very good. And I'll do that. All right. So I'll see you next week with another quartet of shows.
Stage Right or Not with Michelle Willens, produced in the studios of Robin Hood Radio, robinhoodradio.com.